everyone, and welcome to Be the Leader You Deserve podcast, where my mission is to inspire you to ask yourself, are you the leader you deserve? Hi, I'm Jill Handley, and I'm so excited to be here with you again today. This is Season 7, Episode 12, School Turnaround, from Focus Plus to Blue Ribbon School. Okay, so today I'm joined by Carol Levely, who is the National Distinguished Principal of Frederick Douglass Elementary, located in Seaford, Delaware. Now, in 2020, Frederick Douglass Elementary School had an amazing year. They were named a National Blue Ribbon School and a National Distinguished ESEA School all in the same year. Then in 2021, they were named a School of Continued Excellence by the state of Delaware. Wow, so many accomplishments. Welcome, Carol.
Hello, welcome.
So glad that you are with us today. Such an accomplishment in just the last few years, despite all of this panic and pandemic and everything we've had going on. So glad to have someone of your caliber with us today. So Carol, as we get started, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and the school that you lead?
Sure. So I'm starting this school year is my 25th year as a principal, and I've been in education for 39. And as you mentioned, 2020 was a really good year for us. Frederick Douglass Elementary School is in Seaford School District in a small part of Sussex County in southern Delaware. We have about 450 students, and my school is grades 3, 4, and 5. And when I went there in 2015, Frederick Douglass was about to be taken over by the state. We were the 190th school out of 194 when you ranked us.
Wow.
We are a Title I school, very high poverty, the highest poverty school of all the schools in Seaford. In October, our building is going to be 100 years old, so we're having a big birthday bash. And it's also very diverse. We have about 140 Hispanic families. We have a sprinkling of Haitian Creole families. I have a Spanish immersion program at every grade level, and I also house the district's autism program for grades 3, 4, and 5.
Wow,
that's building.
That is incredible. So, you know, I know the listeners, after hearing where you started when you took the school over and where you've taken the school with your leadership, that in of itself, people are just, I'm sure, chomping at the bit to hear all of the wisdom that you have to share today. So, Carol, you undoubtedly have so much to be proud of, but I'm going to ask you to kind of pick one thing, if you could, to share with our listeners that you feel, as a leader of over 25 years of a principalship and 39 years of education, what's the one thing that you say that you are the most proud of?
That's tough. One thing. Wow. Just because my time in Seaford is the most recent. If I were to pick something that I'm most proud of in Seaford, it would be that journey from a Focus Plus school to a National Blue Ribbon and a Distinguished Title I school. When I was in Maryland, my most proud moment was I had the opportunity to open a brand new pre-K to 5 building that had about 850 students. But definitely near and dear to my heart, at least in the last 8 years, is that turnaround from Focus Plus about to be taken over from the state to that great year in 2020.
Absolutely. Now, Carol, that is just mind-blowing. So talk to us about, when you're taking the helm, at the helm, the lead of the school that's about to be taken over, talk to us about your journey. What were your first steps to start to turn the school around, that then turned it around just a few years later to be recognized as a National Blue Ribbon School and a National Distinguished School. What were your first steps? And talk to us a little bit about the journey, because that's a short time to turn it around from what most would consider a quote unquote failing school to now a nationally recognized school.
Yeah, it was definitely a journey. That's for sure. There were a lot of very difficult decisions and conversations and things to do. But I would say there were a few main things that I did that first year or two. Obviously, being, as you said, a failing school or about to be taken over by the state, the atmosphere was not a good place for anybody that walked in the building. Kids, families, community, staff, myself. It was a very toxic environment. So atmosphere had to be handled first, in my opinion, because it wasn't a good place for anybody. And learning sure wasn't going to occur. Then I'd say as the atmosphere improved, and that was 17 hours of how I could explain atmosphere, then we move on to holding people accountable. So once I built that trust to a staff and I got the right staff in the right places, then I had to hold people accountable. So from standing at your door to greeting students in the morning, to how we dressed, how we talked with one another, how we did our lessons, just overall accountability was a huge part of that improvement, and establishing school norms and non-negotiables. And I will tell you, from 2015 even till now, you know, this year coming up, those norms and non-negotiables obviously have evolved. So we started with a handful, and then we added a couple, and then we added a couple more. The staff, so that we could build and continue to make the building better and better. I'd say another big reason for the improvement was every single staff member. I like to refer to it as all hands on deck. So everybody had a job and everybody had a schedule. Unfortunately, when I came there, adults wrote schedules for what was best for that adult. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if they wanted lunch one, but maybe that was the only time that a special ed teacher could have a child for math, the lunch came first. So when I say all hands on deck, everybody had a schedule, the para educators, the teachers, the special educators, and obviously I had to write those schedules because I had to make sure that every child got what they needed throughout the day. And then the last big thing was we had to find time to celebrate. And obviously, being 190 out of 194, there wasn't a whole lot to celebrate that first year. So I'll never forget my art teacher. I asked her to enter some kids into a coloring contest. Not a very rigorous standard, but we had a student win, and I can remember celebrating that poster contest like it was first in the state for math achievement, like, because we had something to celebrate. Absolutely. So as the years have gone on, each year we've had more and more to celebrate, and luckily 20, after a lot of hard work by the staff, we were able to celebrate at that national level, which is where we want to be. So that's what I would say in a very brief amount of time, how we got there.
Yeah, having those, being able to have people who, I always say, you know, every educator works hard, but it's really, really nice when we start to get those recognized benefits for people to feel like, okay, you know, we always feel like it's worth it, but when those little successes come along and start to snowball into bigger successes, that kind of helps people feel like, okay, it was all worth it. All the hard work, all the, you know, blood, sweat, and tears that went into it. So that is amazing. So Carol,
Thank you.
I'm going to ask you a little bit more to dig a little bit deeper into the first thing you talked about, because I think that that's something, whether you're a brand new principal or a principal taking over a new building, oftentimes what we see is that when schools are not succeeding at their full potential, it 10, 9 times out of 10, it points back to the culture. So let's talk about, you'd mentioned a toxic culture. So what would your advice be to, whether you're a brand new principal or a principal taking over a brand new building that is inheriting a toxic culture, what would you say were the first few things that you do to kind of start to build that trust and turn that culture around?
Well, the first thing was I knew there weren't any expectations for anybody, adults or children. So I came up with what I affectionately call the three R's. So respect, responsibility, and the right to learn. So, for example, how we're going to respect one another. For kids, how we're going to respect a peer, how we're going to respect a teacher, how we're going to respect a principal. What does that look like on the playground, on the bus, in the classroom? Right to learn, for example, the kids, if they're making choices that causes the other kids not to be able to learn, that there's a problem with that. Same goes for teachers. If you're at a faculty meeting and you're on Facebook on your cell phone, that the people around you, the other staff, can't focus on that professional development. So definitely that was the first thing. If I had a dollar for every time I said, well, let's think about the three R's, whether I was talking to a child or a teacher, was that very respectful of you? And then have that conversation. So that definitely was first, and we still have the free three R's at Frederick Douglass. Nothing's changed, just I don't have near as much money in my pocket for every time I say it. There were 312 suspensions the year before I went to Frederick Douglass. I had nine this past year
Oh
coming
my
out of
gosh.
COVID.
That's
And
amazing.
obviously I had to have a lot of conversations about respect and responsibility and the right to learn. I'd say the second big thing was you had a I had a I had to be in the classrooms. I had to be present. I had to listen. I had to model what I was looking for. If I was having a problem with the way teachers and staff were dressing, I had to model it. I had to highlight when I saw, like, wow, great Thursday outfit today, or just almost practicing what you preach, like walking the walk, whatever educational phrase you want to use, but you mean what I say. And I also quite had to remind myself that it was the school and the environment overnight. Like, I came from a very successful school prior to going to Fred Douglass, and I wanted to fix everything and make everything better in like a month. And I had to frequently say, that's ridiculous, Carol. Like, what in the world are you thinking? So I had to prioritize. And honestly, I came up with a 3-year plan, not only for the climate and the culture, the atmosphere, but also academics. So it can't happen. So whether you're a brand new principal or a principal taking over a new building, you have to pace yourself and prioritize.
And that gets tricky sometimes, particularly to your point, when you're low, near that low performing mark in the state. Oftentimes we get all that external pressure. Like, I think as leaders, we understand the need to go slow, to go fast, but oftentimes we don't get that grace from the external, pressure. So how did you balance that?
Oh my goodness. You talk about external pressure that first year. I mean, we literally in Delaware, you're ranked focus. And then if you're still failing, focus plus.
Oh.
So we literally were under a microscope of not only the Department of Ed, but our district office. And then they had all, Delaware's a small state, so lots of outside consultants that would come in and almost daily look at my data, look at, go in classrooms, do observations, do 30-page reports about what was working, what was not working. And honestly, I think the way I survived was I had to keep my focus on the kids.
Okay.
Like, yeah, yep, it was tough. And yeah, I probably would have liked to put on the brake a few times, but I couldn't because I couldn't let the school be taken over by the state. So I had to keep pushing on the gas. I had the staff that was hurting the building and the children the most. And when I say building, I mean the staff community. But the staff that was not making the biggest, that was making the biggest impact on kids in a negative way was where I had to spend the majority of my time. But it was, ooh, just hearing you say that external pressure brings back memories of many, many, a long day, long night, long weekend. There's a few first names of outside consultants that I still panic when I hear their name because it was tough. You know, like anyone that's been in education knows what that pressure's like. And it was hot seat from principal meetings in Seaford to the Department of Ed, having to go in front of a whole lot of stakeholders at the Delaware level to kind of prove what my improvement plan was every 90 days. And then to take the data to show how we were doing, like that was for 3 years.
Wow, Carol, that's and I think about you mentioned all the different people in your building, and unfortunately, in my experience, when people come in from different capacities, they're not always on the same page. So it's like you have, as the principal, what you've identified as priorities. Then the one outside person comes in and they want to identify a different, perhaps, set of priorities, and then another person's pushing with another agenda. So how were you able to manage, and I guess appease everyone who was coming in your building, particularly when their priorities didn't align with yours? Because clearly, your reputation, what you've done with your other school, you knew where you were taking the school and what needed to be done. So, as a principal, how do you navigate that, those competing priorities, when outside influences don't quite align with what you know needs to be done?
Well, I guess the only good thing with that is everyone's main priority was to help our school not be taken over by the state. So now everyone had a different way of thinking I should get there. So what I did was I honestly, depending on which stakeholder it was or which outside group it was coming in and putting us under a microscope, there were some things that I just handled myself and I didn't even take it to the teachers because I knew either they weren't ready for it or the building wasn't ready for it or the community wasn't ready for it. For example, one of the first external people said that we needed to have a more clear like dress code. And I knew that that was like the furthest thing that needed to be worked on.
Right.
So I came up with a dress code. It was very to satisfy that need.
Gotcha.
But there wasn't a consequence. Flip flops, you know. So I there were some things that I satisfied to the bare minimum, knowing that you want to input, but that I know that that's not what we need to focus on right now. Data, a lot of the people from the outside, I'll say, including the district office outside of Fred, it was all about the data. Mm-hmm. And they constantly wanting, you know, dig into the data, dig into the data, dig into the data. Everybody wanted to dig into the data. Well, the data was all bad. There wasn't anything good about the data. It was all bad. Attendance was bad. Suspension rate was bad. Academic data was bad. So again, I formed a small group of staff and a few parents, and we would have data reviews, but I didn't put it out to everybody to have to do, because it would have monopolized all their time. And I wanted them to focus on creating a classroom environment that was a good place for everybody, and their lessons, the lessons they were delivering to their kids. And I had to protect them from, I'll say, busy work. Not that data and review and action planning is not important. It is, but not when you're about to be taken over by the state and all the data is bad.
Yeah, no, that, and I think that right there is something that all leaders, you know, regardless of where your school is at, because let's face it, we've all got lots of external pressures, and trying to navigate the priorities again that we set for our school based on what we know needs to be done. With, so I love that idea of trying to, because, you know, we do try to shield our staff from all the extra, right? Everything we can so that they can focus on what's most important. So I think that's such a great piece of advice, is how can I, and I hate to say like meet the compliance requirement, but that's what I'm going to call it. How can I meet this compliance requirement? And not that it wasn't, to your point, not that looking at data is bad, or not that some of these things or suggestions weren't bad, but, you know, I always say, like, you can't dig deep into differentiation if we don't all have a common understanding of what we believe about kids, right?
Right, exactly.
So that was incredibly helpful. So clearly you've had lots of successes, Carol. But I think one of the other things that we do as leaders is that, and I know for myself for a fact, lots of things that I'm successful with now, it's because I wasn't so successful the first time I tried it. So when you reflect on all the things that you've learned throughout your leadership career, and you think about, that didn't go so well the first time, what are two or three things that you feel were the most impactful that you haven't already shared that you think from a leadership perspective that leaders need to know?
Well, I would say you need to listen and involve the staff, the community, the parents, the students. You know, even at the elementary level, I have what I call student ambassadors, mm-hmm. like at the high school level, student council. I just think that listening and learning and involving is critical. No matter which school I've been in, that's been very important to me. Taking care of my staff, I feel, has been impactful. I made myself a promise in 1999, dating myself a little, that I would never forget what it was like to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. And I can honestly say, going on year 25, that I feel like I, in most cases, haven't. I'm sure there's staff out there that would say I'd have, but I think most of my staff in my career would say that I have done a good job with that. And then definitely the most impactful thing is every single decision that I make goes back to the kids, because that's why I get up out of bed every morning. And just remembering that it's all about the kids. You know, one of my favorite books that I've read over in the last 10 years is Kids Deserve It, by Todd Nasloney, and I forget the other author, but Adam Welcome. How could I forget him? He's the marathon runner. That's right. That's awesome. But just a fantastic book. And it kind of solidified, it is all about the kids, and kids deserve it. I used it for a book study with whatever staff, whatever year it came out. And because it is, they deserve the very, very best. And every single day, that's my mantra. Like, what do we need to do to make today the very best for them?
That's awesome. Yeah, Todd and Adam were both guests, I think season 4 maybe, of the podcast. And yeah, they're both exceptional, inspirational. Like, their wisdom and experience is amazing, but the way that they have to just inspire other leaders based on keeping kids at the premise of your decision making is so awesome. Like, love that so much.
Yes.
So, Carol, I have another question for you, because clearly taking over a school that was about to be taken over by the state was a challenging event. And so, you know, building that culture, and then you mentioned the second thing was around holding people accountable. Finding that fine line of pushing people to the place that holds them accountable, but there's a fine line between that and then pushing them over the edge. How do you find that balance of knowing how far to push your staff to keep them all, you know, rowing in the same direction, or, you know, keeping in alignment with the shared vision, but not push them too hard or too fast? Because you'd also mentioned, I've got the same personality. Like, I want everything amazing yesterday, but we have to, you know, we have to pace ourselves, because otherwise sometimes we'll just be out there leading all by ourselves. So how do you, in your experience, what have you found is the best way to kind of temper the understanding of how to push somebody just to beyond their comfort zone so that they grow and do, but that they don't wither?
Well, I think it's the pre-planning that we do as principals. So, for example, I think I would fail if I just kind of planned a PD and then I plan the next one and then I think about a staff meeting and, well, yeah, here I'm going to do that. So, honestly, you know, people talk about vision, but you need to pre-plan. When you're taking over a failing school, I had to pre-plan every single move, mm-hmm. because I had to get the staff ready for the next move. So, for example, when I went into the building in 2015, the math program was math worksheets, period. And I personally wanted to throw all the worksheets in a pile and have a bonfire. But I knew I couldn't go to that first step as much as I wanted to. So I come up with a 10-step plan to get rid of those worksheets and to create a solid math plan. So you have to start with where your staff is. First, you have to teach them, what does a good math lesson look like? So you watch videos. As a principal, I went in and modeled lessons. I sat with them in PLC and we created lessons. We created a math template for how to build a math lesson based on the standards. Then we went and watched one another teach math lessons. And then we by year three, maybe even year two, the math workbooks were gone. I didn't have to burn them. I didn't have to put them in a box. I tried to sneak them out, and then I had to be in the classroom to find them and say, Oh, I thought we said we weren't going to do that worksheet. How about if you're trying to do this skill, I'll come in tomorrow and let's co-teach this together. I'll show you how we can do it without that worksheet. So I don't know if that's a perfectly good example, but I had teachers that were ready for me to come in and model the third week. I had teachers year two that were still wondering, like, what she really want to do when she comes in here, or why is she really coming in? So yeah, I had to figure out which staff were ready for me when to do whatever part of that plan. But the ultimate goal for everyone was to burn those worksheets. And
That's
that was with everything we did.
That pre-planning is so important. It's I say, you know, being a leader, a school leader is a little bit like playing chess, is that you're always having to think so many steps ahead, to your point. And then, you know, we know with teachers that backwards design planning is the best way to go. But I think the same can be said for leaders, is that what's my end goal? And to your point, you know, 3 years down the road, 5 years down the road, what if it looks great? What does it look like? And then how do we get there? So that backwards planning. So I do have another question as it relates to staffing. So clearly, I'm confident that I'm sure you have people who you started with that are just celebrating with you. But I'm also assuming, and perhaps I'm wrong, that you had people that really didn't have a desire to follow the vision and mission of turning the school around, and where you were leading. So we know that helping those who aren't in alignment with the place we're taking the school find another place where they would be more in alignment. It takes a lot of time, some time and energy. So how do you go about balancing the people who are at the root of the toxicity with empowering the people who are wanting to jump on board with you?
Well, yes, you're right. There's definitely a there. I will say there was more people off the energy bus as opposed to on in 2015. Matter of fact, I used to use the analogy with the superintendent that I had a little Volkswagen on the energy bus, and I had a whole big greyhound of folks that needed to get off the bus. But I honestly, again, started with the most difficult, the most challenging, the teachers that I knew were hurting kids either based on the climate or their lack of teaching skills. And I started with eight that first year that were all put on pretty much immediate improvement plans. And you know, as a principal, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners know, improvement plans, if you have one a year, that's extra work. I had eight, and that was classroom teachers,
I
not
can't
to mention,
imagine. Wow.
yeah. And that doesn't ca mention I also had a secretary on one, I had my chief custodian, but it was worth it because guess what? They would talk and they would talk to my mediocre staff that maybe weren't on an improvement plan yet, but I was in their rooms. And the mediocre staff luckily wanted to get better. So they didn't have to end up on that improvement plan because they talked. I mean, when I first went, nobody wanted to be there. No one wanted to apply for a job. Parents didn't want their kids there. It was the smallest school in the district. So I had two or three at every grade level. And when I first started, it was a K-5 school. The second year, it became a 3-5. That's a whole nother podcast. But anyway, I had eight people on an improvement plan, and of those eight, three are now very successful teachers at my school.
Oh, that's incredible.
Five no longer work in education.
And that's incredible too.
Year two, I had six improvement plans. that are now outstanding continued, and then more that I had a that still were not picking up the pace the way I thought. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that second year, the first year, most of the improvement plans, you know, you always start with what the biggest issue is, or at least mm-hmm. I do.
Yep.
And of those eight, all of them was classroom environment.
Mm.
And because I had to start there.
Yes.
Year two, I had none where the main issue was classroom environment. It might have been a secondary goal, but I was able to have improvement plans based on lesson planning or professional growth mm-hmm. or whichever indicator I wanted to use for teacher improvement.
Well, and I think that that says so much, Carol. I know when I was, you know, before I became a principal, 17 years ago, they, one of the things I remember my principal prep classes that someone said that I will never forget is that the best gift that you can give to great teachers is to surround them by other great teachers. And I thought, oh, okay, so that's a job I have. Because I think when I was a teacher, you know, when I felt most successful, it was when my teammates brought to the table what I felt like I was bringing to the table. And so that's something that I've always worked hard at. And I love that you reference all this, because, you know, we know there are things that build culture when you're focusing on the positives. But I think listeners need to hear and be affirmed with sometimes clearing toxic culture is getting rid of, or, you know, helping them make a decision one way or the other, that you can't always just go in with the positives, because that's important. But sometimes we've got to, you know, eliminate the bad energy, as you would say.
Yes. Yeah. The energy vampire, yes. John yes. Gordon would say, yes. Right?
Absolutely.
No negative Nellies at Frederick Douglass.
I love it. So Carol, clearly all of this work that you've done, has taken a lot from you. And so one of the things that we've been talking about this season is that, you know, we know that teacher burnout is an all-time high, but I would be inclined to say that so is leadership burnout. So in order to avoid that, and clearly you've done something well to be doing it still all these years, is setting boundaries. So what advice do you have for other principals of ways to set boundaries or not burn out?
That's a very good question. So, you know, when I think about like how I stay sane and how I continue to just love what I do, and I seeing the kids' eyes light up or be excited about something that we're doing in a classroom or as a school, I would say it's definitely still a struggle, the boundaries. Mm-hmm. And I think it will be until I decide to retire. But I think what works for me is
schedule.
Mm-hmm. Never do I let anybody except the superintendent my schedule. So anything student related, including my classroom visits, mm-hmm. It never gets bumped. Mm. Because that's where I like being, is in the classroom or doing something with kids, having lunch with them, going for a walk with a group of kids, going out on the playground. Like that stands firm. The other thing about keeping my own schedule that I feel has kept me sane is I try to incorporate some kind of fun in every day for me. And I'm talking at the schoolhouse right now. So having lunch with kids. I go into the cafeteria. Kids will write me a letter. Hey, Miss Lovely, will you have lunch with me? We'll go out to the picnic tables if it's nice. I'll go in the cafeteria. I'll play games with kids. Like, I'm famous for bingo. The kids love to come up and play bingo. And I love that too. So I try to deliberately build at least a half an hour a day where I'm doing something I'm going to look forward to. Because if not, especially when you're in a turnaround building, your whole day just becomes yuck.
Right.
And then probably I'll say on my own time, and we all know that principals don't have hours. At least this principal doesn't. But my morning time is my time.
Mm-hmm.
So my alarm goes off at 5 o'clock in the morning. And from 5, that's my time. So I like to walk. Mm-hmm. So if most days, 360 out of 365, weather permitting, even if it's drizzling, I am outside, headphones in, getting myself ready, walking my neighborhood, walking the pond, 5:30 to 6:30 every morning. I'm getting my head together. I'm taking a nice shower. 7 o'clock, I'm in my car commuting to my school, and 7:30, I hit the ground ready to tackle that day. And I think building my own schedule, creating that quote unquote fun time, that morning time is critical for me.
I think that morning time is so important. I think that's, you know, I read something a long time ago that talked about, you know, if you get up an extra, even half an hour earlier, like the benefit, and just give it to yourself, whatever that means, you know, that will far outweigh that 30 minutes of sleep. You know, whether it's, you know, some people are journaling, some people are listening, some people are just sitting in the dark drinking their coffee, you know, but giving it to yourself, pouring into yourself, whatever that means, really does set your day off right. I try to have a morning routine myself, that time to yourself, because we all know once our, you know, we open the building and set that first foot in there, then, you know, we've got to be ready for the day. So having ourselves in that mindset of, I'm ready for this day to change some lives today. So let's get it, that kind of a thing. So those are great, great suggestions, Carol. So you've mentioned a few other people. You mentioned Todd and Adam, and you mentioned John Gordon. So clearly you've have lots of resources, lots of people that you either follow or, you know, read their work or listen to their podcast or whatever the case may be. And we know that we're our own best resources, right? That's why this season is so amazing for me. I feel like I'm getting like a behind the scenes look at all the great things before the episode's release. But who are three people that you feel like you're connected with, or that you kind of look into their work that you would suggest for other people?
Well, definitely John Gordon. He goes way back in my career on social media, his books, his blogs, his newsletter. I subscribe to it all. Belonging to NAESP, I joined as vice principal. Luckily, my mentor principal told me about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the best connections I have as a principal, whether it's their conference, their newsletter, their magazine.
Mm-hmm.
But connecting with principals around the country. I mean, yes. I went to your session this past July in
and now I'm on a podcast with you.
So with successful principals around the country is what it's all about. And, you know, educators, we're great thieves. We steal from one another. We get ideas from one another. We take ideas and tweak it and make it work in our building. And I would say that's who I that with the most.
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree with you. NAESP has been just such an amazing opportunity to connect with other people, because I think sometimes when we're in our own district, we kind of stay in that box. And it's so nice to meet people from across the country to affirm, confirm, and that, you know, and then just kind of, like you said, steal from one another and hear the great things. So I love that. All right, Carol, last question. What are three words that other people who know you would use to describe you?
Three words. Okay. Mm-hmm. I know what four words would be. So let me think of how I can say that in three. I'm going to say all about kids.
Oh, I love that so much. I love that so much. Well, Carol, you are just a leader among leaders. So I'm sure when people listen to this, they're going to want to hear more from you. So if people want to connect with you or reach out to you to learn more, how can they get in contact with you?
Well, I'm on Twitter, Carol Levely, FDES. We also have a Facebook page, the Fred Douglas Facebook page, or the Fred Douglas website. My email is on there, and it's seafordbluejays.org, and then you just pick Fred as a school. But I'd be happy to connect, because every single time I talk to an educator, they teach me something. And if I can share an idea with them or bring clarity to something, that would be great.
All right. Well, Carol, thank you so much for being on the show today.
You're very welcome.
If you enjoyed this episode, School Turnaround, from Focus Plus to Blue Ribbon School, please share it with your friends by using the social media buttons you see at the bottom of the post. Now, if this is your first episode, then I definitely encourage you to go back and check out the other episodes in this season, and then start listening to the other seasons. While you're there, I also encourage you to subscribe to the show so that you get automatic episode updates for Be the Leader You Deserve. And I'd also encourage you to go ahead and leave an honest review and rating on Apple Podcasts. They really do help me out when it comes to the ranking of the show, and I do make it a point to read every single one of the reviews that I get. And friends, we are our own best resource. So if we aren't connected on social media, let's go ahead and change that status. Follow me on Twitter and connect with me on LinkedIn. Leaders, as you go about this week, I want to wish you a wonderful week of school. And while you're having a great week, don't forget to ask yourself, am I the leader I deserve, and what am I doing about it?